This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now the finale of Hawkeye.
I'm Alex. Finale. I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about, so this is Christmas? The sixth and final episode of season
Shakespearean
one.
Punctuation,
the series,
Alex.
Who knows? We don't know yet. Hopefully there'll be a season two. I guess we'll see what happens. But this wraps up the final season. The first season. If you haven't checked it out, go watch it on Disney Plus, because we're pretty much going to jump right into spoilers. But big battle royale at Rockefeller Center. But before we even get to that, I think it's important to talk about our rankings of all the MCU TV series so far. Let's do it.
This is what I call
to talk about
ambush.
The rankings of them, but
ambush.
This is the end of year one of MCU TV. This is why we started doing this podcast, Marvel Vision, right here, recapping the MCU. So looking back on it, at least with Hawkeye, we're just kind of fall for you.
You gotta give us some kind of heads up before you drop a fucking bomb on like
we
that.
Can
like,
do this, Pete. We can do this because think of all the shows we have here. WandaVision.
Right.
Loki.
Yep.
Right.
Captain America.
Right.
And of course, Hawkeye.
Oh, and then we have What If.
And What If.
Yeah.
And S.H.I.E.L.D. And Jessica
Agent
Jones.
Luke
Agent
Cage.
Carter.
Yeah. The original Incredible Hulk show with Bill Bixby.
With David Banner, because they thought Bruce was too controversial a name to give.
Those Doctor Strange TV movies that nobody's seen.
The
it's
original
a lot to go through, man.
The original Aquaman cartoon.
Yep.
Wow.
Train
Scooby
going
Doo.
Through tunnel, the first ever movie.
Train going through tunnel, very sexual. You bring that up a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, it was very formative for several reasons. I'll go first to give you guys time to think about it. Here's my take on Hawkeye. Is I think, though it's not my favorite Marvel series that was out this year, I think it was the most consistent Marvel series, and I say that because there's been a lot of controversial finales for several of these series. Ooh. Some I liked, I think, more than other people. But Hawkeye hit the ground running. It was very funny. It was very fun. It was an action movie, Christmas time. That's what it wanted to be. And it nailed that over the course of six episodes. I think, like we talked about, there were some Shaggy bits, some things that I didn't love quite as much as others.
Shaggy bits?
Shaggy bits.
Yeah.
What is that?
Scoob?
I don't know what you're talking about. Shaggy bits to
what
me
I mean
like
is it meandered for a while. It came together, I think, nicely in the finale, and I think that's something that's always very important. I don't want to judge a series fully on the finale, but I do think they brought a lot of the threads together. They tied things up very nicely. Certainly, there's a possibility for a second season if they want to go in a bunch of directions that I'm sure we'll talk about at the end of the podcast. But ultimately, felt very good about it at the end of the day. So definitely in my top tier of the six series that we're talking about here. But what about you, Justin? Just to give Pete some more time to deal with this huge bomb we dropped on.
Yeah,
dangerous bomb. We should always have this at the top of our head. This is how, well, we should read it down when we go to sleep at night, like Arya's list in Game of Thrones. Of the Marvel series, I will rank them from top to bottom. Pete's still making a list physically on a piece of paper.
Wait, so Loki, all right, go ahead.
I'm going to go Hawkeye.
Whoa, number one? Hawkeye number one?
You always, the most recent thing you watch is always the best. Every time. Doesn't matter.
That's right.
Okay.
I love recent things. I'll explain afterwards. Let me start again. Great. Hawkeye. Okay.
Yeah,
WandaVision, Loki, What If, Captain America, Winter Soldier.
I think that's fair. Just to rank them to give Pete another couple of seconds here, I'll put it WandaVision, Loki, Hawkeye.
Wow.
What If, Captain America, the Winter Soldier.
Okay.
No explanations.
No explanations necessary. Well, let me say, while Pete's still thinking, this is a mantra on our podcast. I think Hawkeye was the one that got, like you said, consistently better, I think, throughout. Mm-hmm. And I think the end explained some of our complaints from the beginning. We talked a lot about how Clint seemed so unhappy and like such a curmudgeon. And from a writing standpoint, seeing the final product, it sort of helps see him open up by the end. Like, I really like when he is wearing the uniform, he's like, yeah, I'm wearing it. Like, and like, you would have never, like, to have him go from where he was to where he is now, I appreciate that change, and it sort of fixes my misgivings from the beginning a little bit.
I think, to your point, again, we're probably going to say to give Pete time to think for the next hour or so until he finally gets his list together. But to your point, I think I was won over by Clint by the end. I was certainly very touched by him saying, listen, we're partners to Kate Bishop. I'm not going to let you go. I'm going to team up with you. The thing with the Elated at the end, we could probably quibble a little bit about the whole whistle thing and whether that was silly or not. But I think the way they played it was a really nice moment and very emotional. I was talking to somebody at work about this. It was a very Martha, why did you say that name? Moment.
No, it was not.
A little bit.
That was a secret thing.
Nothing.
That he let her know that he knows.
If you look at it with the subtitles, it says whistling in parentheses, and then in other parentheses it says Martha.
No, that's
nothing.
A whole
is as bad as Martha.
Bring the Martha's
DC's
terrible. The Martha's
bullshit terrible. Into the yeah. The Martha was really bad.
That's have you like, finished your ranking yet, Pete?
Yes, I have.
Go
I
ahead.
Gave you a thumbs up for Christ's sakes.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a thumbs up. Need more time.
Okay. Hawkeye number one, Winter Soldier number two, Loki third, WandaVision fourth, What If fifth.
Wow.
Wait, what was your number two? Captain America, the Winter Soldier?
Yeah.
Wow. And just to check, you were yelling at Justin for having recency bias, and then you also chose the most recent series as number one.
Well, yeah. I mean, after I had a little time to think about it, I mean, Loki had some really great moments, but also had some, like, you know what I mean? There was a lot of great, but there was some twists and turns where some episodes I wasn't losing my mind as others. But for me, the Winter Soldier I put above it just for the, realization, the kind of homage that we got to pay to a black Captain America. And that was really powerful. I was hoping the series would push that more. But just the fact that we kind of opened that door and we're starting to have the conversation makes me so happy and kind of put it in number two. But overall, like, Loki was a lot of fun. I mean, the alligator, Loki was unbelievable. Plus, we got, Hemsworth playing the frog at Loki, which was great. So there was a lot of, like, really cool moments.
Well, we didn't get that. They cut that out, right?
Well, I gave it to a little bit. I mean, you got him jumping
was
in the
thought
jar.
Of it. We got the thought of it in our mind. That's
exactly.
And I think maybe a way for us to all agree is I think I wouldn't consider any of these to be failed. Like, they were all successful, I think. And I think we just have different, slightly different tastes. Mm-hmm. Some of them good, some of them bad.
Yeah, I won't specify which one is which. Why don't we jump into
this? I didn't
this?
Say anything about you.
Let's jump into this last episode of Hawkeye, though, and start talking about it, because lots of big stuff goes down. I don't even know exactly where we should start, other than, like I was saying before, I think it was just really nice to see Clint stepping up emotionally, giving that tribute to Kate, and allowing her to become the hero she knows she can be the entire time. I thought that was kind of wonderful and a great theme of the episode.
I want to talk about, there was a lot of different twists and stuff that we got. I mean, the fact that the swordsman was the good guy was a very fun twist that I didn't know I wanted until, like, he was kicking butt towards the end there and on the right side of things. So that was something that was like, this guy's a creepy piece of shit for most of the series, but then to kind of see him fight on Kate's side was pretty magical. It was very cool.
Well, and if we're going to talk about that, that's such a surprise to me.
Yeah.
Both that he was ended up being a quote-unquote good guy, but also that he was so much of the menace in the first half of the season. And then in the end, it's like he just has walked around a party with a sword on his suit. And then he just, like, wings it out and dings a couple of tracksuit guys. And that's it. I was shocked. I thought for sure there was going to be a Clint-Jack fight, and we get nothing.
But also,
just to comment on that, I agree with you, but I think that part of that is our expectations of what we thought was going to happen. And I agree with Pete. I think it was a really good feint Like, all I'm saying is that's our expectations. And I don't think you can necessarily judge it on, well, they didn't meet these theories that we had. Because I do think, ultimately, it's very pleasing to find out at the end that, oh, all of these doofus things he was saying throughout the first half of the season were not hiding any menace.
He's just a doofus.
He's just a doofus.
Yeah. And
I don't know. It's very fun. The thing with Armand Seven, who, the true villain of the series.
He peed his pants. He was the true villain.
For
at
sure.
the Hamptons. That's a fancy place to pee your pants. I know from experience.
Hey, if you're going to pee your pants, go fancy.
I mean, my big question, they didn't specify this in the series, what is it at a white party, in which case you don't, it's not as noticeable? That's where you wear all white, Pete, not where everyone is white. Calm down.
What the fuck did you just fucking do?
No, a white Pete party is an obnoxious, rich thing. And let me say, Alex, you think you're hiding all your pant peeing just because your jeans are white? And you're not, my friend. It's just people don't want to tell you.
I haven't white does not
had
mix,
to
bro.
Wear these white pants this entire time.
No. I mean, for two reasons. Either just go to the bathroom or or pee your pants.
Waste
all
my time walking to the bathroom? Come on.
Miss out on the conversation.
Peeing your pants is cool. Consider me Miles Davis.
Wow. This is, talk about a season finale. Pete finding a spot to drop in a prime Adam Sandler.
Topical. So topical.
In any case, yes, his thing with Armand was very funny. His exchange at the end when he's sitting there near the ambulance was very funny as well. And I think that does, despite what we thought, line up with the place that he's in usually in the comic books, where, yeah, he started as a villain, I believe, but he's ultimately sort of this dorky C-list Avenger most of the time. So perhaps that's how they're going to use him going forward.
I like the moment where he was just by himself kind of talking to himself. Moment that really kind of revealed he doesn't have an evil plan or whatever. He's just kind of a doofus guy who's like, come on, man. This is it. It's you and your sword. Like,
I do think, though, just to say something that I do think is a bigger issue with the show is that Eleanor wasn't a bigger threat. And,
well, and let me ahead. Say, let me just, because I don't think, it wasn't about Jack's use by the end of this season. It was not matching up with what my expectations were. I feel like the story the show is telling, especially in the first episode with him, Armand, the older Armand, getting the sword, it was this was a character. Unless this was a purposeful red herring, which I don't think this episode was like, we fooled you. It was much more like, yeah, we didn't have time for this. We ended up, it's like you go to a party with your high school friends and then you start hanging out with college kingpins. You're like, well, so I don't have time for you, my friends I came with. I'm dealing with kingpins now. And I think that's a choice that the show maybe made. We got your Black Widows. We got your kingpins in here. Fun. Very good. A lot of the episode. But I think we lost touch with the horse that brung us, so to speak, with Jack and Eleanor, these characters that I was perfectly happy unraveling the mystery of.
It's
and would have just liked to see a little bit of acknowledgement of like, hey, these were the characters we were thinking about in the first three episodes, and at least give us a little bit of punctuation on their arcs.
It's also possible that might be a directing choice as well. I'm thinking specifically of the thing in the last episode where Jack was so stagey while he was being arrested and going, my love, it was not me. I will be right back.
He was right back.
And he was right back. But my point being that the way Tony Dalton delivered that, and I wouldn't put it on him. I'd put it on the director of the episode or directors. I think Bert and Bertie directed that one. Mm-hmm. That is clearly indicating that he is in on something, but in retrospect, it's just the dorkiest way he possibly could have said that. And to your point, Justin, I think things like that don't necessarily work, but if they had used different takes or modulated things in a different way, I think you could have played it a little more evenly potentially throughout.
No, but that's the point. Like, even up until that point, we're like, oh, this guy's definitely a bad. And the way his cadence did that, it was still fooling us. And I think that purposely trying to fool us and then to kind of reveal that, no, he's just kind of douchey. So it was, I think, directorial-wise, a conscious choice to still keep thinking that this is a possibility. But since Justin did mention Kingpin, I would like to kind of get talking about
just before we move on to Kingpin, hold on, I have one more thing. But, I mean, I will say Eleanor is Kate's mom. She is dispensed with and arrested with the line, "Do heroes arrest their moms on Christmas?"
Yeah.
Then we don't see her anymore. And Kate just goes to Christmas with Clint. No emotional payoff. So much of this show was about Kate and her mom trying to figure that out. That we spent a long scene where Jack and Eleanor were like making out a little bit. And then at the end of the season, we get Jack's just like, "I have a sword now. I'll stab anybody." And Eleanor is dispatched with off screen without the emotional ramifications for even our main character, Kate, coming out of that. That feels strange.
So I agree with you on that. And I think this transitions potentially nicely into what Pete wants to say. I think it's because a lot of that guilt, a lot of the villainy was shoved onto Kingpin right at the end here by making that connection, which, mind you, makes logical sense when you think about it. But at the same time, this buildup of what's going on with Eleanor, what's happening with Eleanor, it blunts that turn that we got because maybe it comes down to Vera Farmiga's delivery on this stuff, but she's very emotionless about almost everything. And that's probably supposed to be in stark contrast to what's going on with Kate, who leads with emotion always on everything. But at the same time, to your point, Justin, it just doesn't work. She's not villainous enough. There's not enough going on with her. She did a couple of bad things, but we just don't get a sense of how bad they were over how long of a time.
That's why I wanted one more scene.
Wait your turn. No. I've been waiting patiently.
Are you going to talk about Kingpin? Eleanor? Because
I know. Okay. I'm just saying, when it comes to Eleanor, like, first off, that was a classic mom line. Like, is this what heroes do? Like, just cutting to your core. That classic, like,
mean mom, villain.
Yeah,
mom.
Like, that was a solid mom burn right there. I don't understand what her plan was. You're going to piss off Kingpin and then go to a party and act like things are cool? Like, I don't understand what her plan was or what her play was. It seemed like she was like, "I draw the line at my daughter, but why aren't you doing anything about that? Like, get your daughter and get the fuck out of the city then," or whatever. But this was this thing of, like, Kate realizing her mom is not, like, a good person or had to make a lot of different choices, you know, because apparently her husband left her in debt. So she went to the Kingpin, which I guess is something you could do. But it's one of those things where, yeah, Ma, you got to get arrested. I'm sorry. And it was emotionally on her face really hard for her to sit there and let that happen. I thought it was a very powerful moment and a messed up moment of, like, yeah, heroes are going to do what they think is right, even if that means arresting their mom on Christmas, which is a fucked up thing. But Kate's kind of stepping in.
I arrested my mom on Christmas. It didn't seem like a big deal to me.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you don't really celebrate Christmas. Is that what you're going to say, Pete?
You don't really celebrate Christmas, so it makes sense.
I had my dad arrested for 8 days over Hanukkah this past year.
Well,
so
that's wow.
The cops are like, is this an eighth crime or just rearresting for the initial crime? It seems to be extended over a whole 8 days.
It's a miracle, is what I said.
Oh, my God. Miracle on 34th Street?
Yeah.
Different holiday. I guess what I'm saying is I didn't mind the acting choice of her being a little bit sort of deadpan about it. That actually made me feel like she is more of a villain. I just wanted one more line or scene where she's like, "Well, if you're a hero, I guess that makes me your arch enemy. Or do you want your mom to be your arch?" Like something that put us in a place where we can walk away and be like, yes. And that's another reason why I assumed we were going to get some answers to these questions in a post-credit situation. Yeah. Instead, we get something quite different.
We'll get to that in a moment as well. Yeah. We talked about Eleanor. We talked about Jack. Why don't we jump over and talk about Yelena and everything going on there? Because for me... Oh, you want to talk about Kingpin, Pete?
Yes, motherfucker, yes.
I feel like that's a big thing. We should save that for the end. You want to get to it now.
Justin brought it up already.
You want to get to it now. All right, let's talk about Kingpin. We can finally get to see Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin right at the top of the episode, which is great.
What a way to start. Like, that guy knows how to make an entrance. Holy shit. Just seeing him in the show on camera again, just very, very moving, very powerful.
Pete loves the character of the guy who's filled with a bug in Men in Black, so he was very choked up and touched seeing him again on screen. That right?
Oh, is that sugar right, water? The sugar water guy?
Wow, I can't believe that was him too. This guy's an unbelievable actor.
Versatile.
Versatile. What an understatement. Anyways, so it was just like so powerful watching him walk into a room, and like I was a little disappointed about like how, like I was hoping to be like, okay, Kingpin's a little involved and then wasn't going to be on screen. I was really surprised how much he was in it, how much fighting there was. Like, I was surprised that it was like him alone versus Kate. I was so nervous about that whole thing. Like, and then I'm glad we got like the off screen kind of shot, because like we need both those characters and other things, and neither one of those characters to go anywhere. So I'm glad we got the classic like died off panel thing that, you know, means nothing. So
means he's dead.
No, yeah. No, it means nothing really happened.
I'd be willing to put down a solid $1,000 that will be the opening scene to the Echo series.
Yeah. Solid $1,000. Wow.
Not a soft $1,000. Not a solid.
Gaseous $1,000. That's how much I'll put down. So, I thought it was great. It was great to see him back again. I thought the other thing that was great is clearly leaning into this being the comic book version of Kingpin was a lot of fun. Down to the purple pads, down to the cane, the super strength.
How about the Hawaiian shirt?
Yeah, the Hawaiian shirt was
he's
a weird choice. It went
Kingpin.
From like, yeah.
So that was a costume. Oh my God, I'm blanking on the name. It's Amazing Spider-Man Family Matters or something like that. There was a series. He's wearing that on the cover, and I believe he wears it in the book as well. So it was straight out of that.
Yeah. But I agree with you, Alex. Having him be able to take an arrow or two and just be like, "Bech," is awesome. And the fact that he is a fighter, like, agree completely. And just everyone's like, wow, it's so surprising they brought him over from the other series, from the other Marvel Netflix. Television universe, without bringing a bunch of other characters. He is perfect. He's so menacing, the sort of fake kindness that he does, adding to the menace, and then to have just a great battle sequence. He's such a like bull of a human fighting, and then he gets hit by a car and just stands up. It's just like basically fine. Awesome.
Yeah, I loved all of that. I loved seeing him back again. Go ahead, Pete.
I was a little concerned because, like, I wanted, like, a definite answer that, like, hey, Echo, yeah, I had your father killed. You know what I mean? Like, it still was a little, like, what happened? You know, because Clint was like, yo, your boss had it killed, so we thought it was maybe the other guy, but did Kingpin tell him to do that? Like,
yeah,
I was still a little murky on that.
What they established was that Kingpin basically ordered the hit. Kazi was the guy who was the informant and set them up. He avoided that meeting where everybody was killed by Ronan because he knew that Ronan was going to go in and kill everybody. So basically Kingpin set him up to take the fall. Maya Lopez found out about that. So I think it's confirmed. Kazi set them
Justin,
up.
Justin, was that Kingpin super clear to you? To me, it wasn't like super clear.
It wasn't super laid out. I agree. Like, we didn't have that moment where Maya was like, you did it. Like
like as the other dude is dying or whatever, be like, Kazi. Kazi, did you, you know what I mean?
That's like, a bad time to ask it. Would you have a sword already, you know, through a stomach?
Well,
ask him before.
That's good. Good timing. I do think that is what happened. And I think that's what we're going to investigate in a more clear way in the upcoming Echo series.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's
potentially. Oh, one thing that I wanted to say that I thought they've been playing really nicely, and this ties into another thing we're probably going to discuss in a little bit, but we've talked a lot about the continuity with previous shows, like specifically in this case, the Marvel Netflix shows and Kingpin showing up. This is clearly a different-ish take on Kingpin, but it doesn't contradict what came before. I think there's an argument. What?
I don't think it's different. I think it's exactly the same.
It 100%.
I mean, I'll give you the Hawaiian shirt, but like,
white suit, super strength. Like, everything with the Marvel Netflix shows was trying to ground these things in as close to reality as possible.
So great.
And here he rips off a car door and throws Kate around.
It's his first move.
F.A.O. Schwartz, like she was a literal toy. So this is, again, this is the comic book version of Kingpin. That's what they're doing here. But also, it isn't like he's like, I've never met Daredevil before. Just so you know, that none of that happened. He doesn't. I don't know exactly what he would do to contradict that stuff, but they're clearly walking a line where they're in classic Marvel Studios fashion, trying to find the best version of this character and bring it to screen, but also not trying very hard not to alienate fans of the Marvel Netflix shows, of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., of these other things, because they know they are very devoted to these shows and they don't want to upset them. There is one thing that I think will upset them later on in the episode we can talk about, but we'll get there in a moment.
Well, speaking of F.A.O. Schwartz, what's weird is that's not the location of F.A.O. Schwartz.
It moved there.
It moved there?
Yeah. Let's shout out Pete, a former F.A.O. employee.
That's right.
Let's never forget.
I was the old school where it was over at the park. By the park and the Apple Cube.
I got angry about that too, and so I quickly searched for it and found out that they now have a location at Rockefeller Center. They could have done it in the Lego store, at Rockefeller Center, or the NBC Experience
Store. Or the TGI Fridays there's a lot of different places. Don't recommend anybody going to.
Definitely gone to the TGI Fridays. Yes. What a landmark.
But yes, Kingpin was great. Just to wrap this up and talk about that final scene, a lot of folks online have pointed this out, but that final scene where Maya shoots Kingpin is pretty much straight up from their appearance in Daredevil 18, and it's played the same way. She's pointing the gun at him. He says some stuff about family, and then there's just a panel where it goes like, blam, and there's a red splat. At the end of the issue, it's revealed that she didn't kill Kingpin. She just blinded Kingpin somehow, I guess, by shooting him just in the eyeballs or whatever.
Very hard to aim just for an eye.
Well, you got to split the bullet to get both of the eyeballs at the same time.
Hawkeye can do it.
In any case, I think what they did there is they left it open where if this is Vincent D'Onofrio being like, nope, I'm good. We went down on a high note with Kingpin. They can do that. If not, more likely they're going to bring him back for the Echo series, at the very least for flashbacks, because he's clearly such an important part of her backstory. So I think we'll see him in one form or another.
I hope so, man. It's just so great seeing him in that role.
Well, particularly,
I don't think they just brought him back for this 1.1 episodes of Hawkeye.
Well,
I mean,
don't get me wrong,
like Vin Rhames was great as Kingpin, like very formidable, huge person, like that fit it, you know, but D'Onofrio also brings a little something to it in such a great way.
Thanks for specifying that. We were all getting very angry at you for not mentioning Vin Rhames.
Good. I mean, he did a great job too, okay?
Yeah. Why don't we talk about Yelena and everything going on there with Kate, because like I was saying earlier, this for me was maybe a highlight of the series, the relationship over the course of these past two episodes or so. Just the mac and cheese scene, as we already talked about in the last episode, was so much fun. But everything that happened here with them was so great and so clearly setting up, like we talked about before, this is the new Hawkeye Black Widow of the MCU.
I want them to immediately have a movie or a TV show, because the two of them together is just magic.
Well, given the end of the episode is Clint essentially naming Kate Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I think if we do have a Hawkeye season two, it's probably going to be Kate and Yelena, right?
I hope so. Wait.
I don't know if he didn't retire though.
Did you just?
He went to a farm where he can run and play and have as much fun as he wants.
There is definitely a season two. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but they did change it from they originally said it was a limited series, and then they started selling this episode as the season finale. So that perked up people's ears. And I think what they've said before about all of these things is anything is open, anything is possible. And as typical with Marvel, I'm sure they just have an idea board full of things. And if it makes sense to do a second season of Hawkeye with the overall MCU story they're telling, it's something they could do. But what did you guys think about Yelena in this episode, and particularly her emotional finish with Clint here?
I thought the the elevator scene between her and Kate, I think, was super fun. So Florence Pugh is just such a great actor. Like, the way she's just dead-eyed, like, I'm bored by all of this, like, barely tolerating Kate. I think she likes Kate, but she's just like, all right, let me get to the real action here. You're a minnow, and I'm here hunting fish, big fish. And then we get the big sequence with Clint. It went on for a long time. I liked where it ended up, but to your point, Alex, the whistle thing, I'm fine with it. Like,
I wasn't upset. It was just, it felt like watching that entire scene, I was certainly thinking, how are they going to get out of this? What thing is he going to say or do that is going to turn this around? And the fact that it's a whistle, it's like, okay, I get that was an emotional thing from the Black Widow movie.
Yeah, it was.
But at the same time, I don't know if you haven't watched the Black Widow movie, if that works. It also feels like a weird thing for him to pull out at that moment.
But I do think if he was looking through his brain, trying to find the thing to be like, look, he just had to prove to her that he was
telling the truth.
He does care for her, and he just had to show her that Nat cared for him and the way that he cares for her, and he needed to prove that to Yelena. And then he did. So I appreciated all of that.
I also wanted to hear him try to tell the truth. I wanted to be like, go ahead, tell what really happened. No, start at the beginning. Go ahead. Like,
I'm so glad they did it. If I have to hear about Vormir one more time, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, my God.
So the red skull, but
it wasn't really the red skull, but it kind of was.
Normally, I'm not a big fan of the there's no time, I'll explain on the way type of storytelling, because it's like, Jesus Christ, just take the extra second and say something. But here I was like, please don't. Let's not get it.
But yeah, I agree with Justin. The elevator stuff was fun. Also, the way that Yelena complimented Kate Bishop's moves was great. Yeah.
Just to mention before that, the tracking shot fight scene was so much fun. Oh, yeah. Having the guy in the office still working there, surprised by everything. Just great. That was
very comic booky.
Very comic booky and very on par with the shot in the car from episode 3, I think, where they were spinning around and showing everything.
Yeah.
I like it. If you're going to have action sequences, show off, brag a little bit, you know, because the MCU can do that.
The fight sequences all around were a ton of fun. And also, like, the moment where Kate was like, it's supposed to be scary. That was a really intense thing when she jumped out the window. I also loved Clint's little moment in the tree with the owl. That was adorable and a lot of fun.
That's a little bit of New York lore that actually happened, right?
There was that did happen. Was it 2 years ago? It was last year.
Was it last year?
Last year.
Might have been. But it was an owl from upstate, right? Who traveled with the tree.
Yeah, because the tree
comes from upstate, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The tree comes from right where I'm from and many years. And
Tyler Farms, right?
Tyler Farms, yeah. I spent all day concentrating.
Farms is what
concentrating
is.
On the trees, yes. Well, don't tell Pete one thing about your life, because it's all he'll ever associate with you, that I had a well when I was growing up.
You drank well water, people.
That's
how upstate he was.
The tracksuit mafia fight was very fun. I felt like...
The bro moment where he was like, thank you, hysterical. That was
to Kate, the Maroon 5 moment, you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun. All the arrows when they're in on the ice rink, just we get to see all the trick arrows play out like we did in, was that the second episode or third episode? Like, that is so fun. We saw the arrow smithing montage where they're putting like the labels on them.
Yeah.
Also super fun.
You gotta label your arrows. Otherwise.
And I think.
Because you don't know. You don't always know by feel.
I think least part of that trick arrow montage, beyond the fact that they were really giving Kate and Clint their Avengers camera circling the moment going on there. Like, that felt like a very specific homage slash thing that they were trying to hit there. Is I really think they were just trying to say, no, actually, this is cool, because I've certainly done it and a lot of other people have done it and said, that's stupid. Why is that guy shooting arrows there? All he's doing is shooting arrows when everybody else is doing this insanely cooler stuff. So to show them having this montage had a greater purpose of making it look as awesome as possible. And they were really successful with it.
Well, and let me say also, I think in that scene when Kate tells Clint about how what we saw at the very beginning of the series, her seeing him during the Battle of New York, was the best case for Hawkeye being cool
Yeah.
That is maybe possible to make.
It was very like touching, she made that whole
It was
speech.
Really good. Yeah, yeah, it was really good. And that's what I was saying earlier when I was like, this finale, despite the criticisms I think we're talking about, still paid off all the stuff we've seen before, and even sort of how Hawkeye is a bit of an afterthought in a lot of the larger movies. This made him a hero on par, and sort of earned his spot in the Avengers, I think, in that speech.
Also, yeah. Like,
it would be great if they told him that, if they're like, hey, Clint, you finally earned your spot in the Avengers.
The whole thing on the ice with the Yelena, like, I thought that was really emotionally well done there with the, you know, the I'm sorry kind of thing. And I'm glad that that's kind of where it ended. I was really worried that she was just going to murder him and then never find out what happened to her sister. But I think that they did it in such a good way of like fighting, and then having some conversation. But man, it was really powerful.
I also thought it was interesting that all of this was going on while Maya was having her own drama literally happen on the side with Kazi and everything that's going on there. I don't mind it because she's really cool and she's a good character, but it definitely felt like, to a point you were making, I think, earlier, Justin, it drew a little bit of focus from everything else that was going on in the series to the point where I felt like you're doing a lot of work to set up this Echo spinoff, which I'm excited about because Alacqua Cox is very cool and very good. But I kind of want to recenter a little bit on the Hawkeyes versus taking up this much time with what's going on with her.
No, and I think I felt like that was needed, like that extra time, because we wanted to know, like, I wanted to know, like, get to the bottom of this. And,
what I mean by that is, I think it's something that probably happened in the writing process as they realized when they were breaking the story that she was going to be a big part of it. And it feels like they probably in advance gave her a lot more landscape than you might expect. I liked all of it, but it felt like it's the sort of thing where you could have put her in one episode or two episodes instead of setting up all of these other things and still spin off a series.
That's a different potential.
Let me offer an even further explanation. I think that the stuff in this episode does pay off her storyline, but it was made so separate because I bet this could have even been made as part of the production of Echo, or at least leading up to that, because her look is different. Like, her hair is totally different in that scene.
Yeah, yeah. Her
hair and it's fully removed from the action, because if it was in the action, it would be too weird to include that in the Echo series. Because I agree with you, it felt a little disjointed, because they could have easily, for the sake of Hawkeye, the show, have had her confrontation with Kingpin happen right in the middle of all the other confrontations with Kingpin that were happening. Like, it would have made total sense if she was there. But instead, it's a fully removed thing, and there's no real interaction with the other characters.
But again, it's fine. It was good stuff. It was emotional stuff. I'm excited to see Echo, so all good there. Let's get to the last scene and talk about that a little bit, because we get an answer to a big question that's been going through the series. Who owns the Rolex watch? And we find out that it was, in fact, Laura Barton. And not only that, this gets to the second thing that may contradict previous MCU history. She gets the watch handed back by Clint, and then she turns it over, and it has a S.H.I.E.L.D. logo and the number 19. So that, without saying it, seems to firmly establish that Laura Barton was Agent 19 of S.H.I.E.L.D., which was the number of Bobby Morse, a.k.a. Mockingbird. So seemingly, it sets her as Agent 19 versus Adrian Palicki, who is also Agent 19 over in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think the very easy explanation is it's a 007 type thing, so they pass it down, and these are two separate characters, and that's fine. But I'm sure there's a lot of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans who are a little annoyed or upset because Laura Barton is potentially erasing Bobby Morse. But I don't
care. That was a lot of hoops to jump through just to be like, hey, here's your retirement watch back.
Well, true. But I mean, like,
it didn't turn into anything. I wanted her to button and like talk to Tony or something. It was just like, hey, I got
you out of the grave.
Well, that would have been cool.
Yeah,
a watch that can talk through death. Well, I do think, because to your point, like, I agree with you. I don't think it's a real, you know, mud in the eye of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans out there, because it can be something that's passed down. I think the implication is that it's not. I think she is and always has been. Mm-hmm. Bobby?
Well, particularly, there's a line that she says back to Clint. I don't remember the exact wording, but it's something about, essentially, she's like mocking him. Like, she's throwing his words back at him. So I think that was them saying saying that she's Mockingbird.
Well, he was like, yo, keep better track of your stuff. And she goes, fuck, look who's talking. Your fucking Ronin suit caused this whole fucking mm-hmm. mass hysteria.
And then
guy,
she followed so don't it up by saying, like a bird. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, that got real
Laura
weird.
Want a,
like,
Laura want a timepiece? but let me say, though, that as a reveal is strange, because it's also a deepening mystery. And mm-hmm. if we're, like, to your what you said earlier, if we're retiring Clint here, why set all this up? What are we doing here? This feels like a whole new series of with Hawkeye and Mockingbird, West Coast Avengers, maybe. Something that is a new direction, because otherwise we spend a lot of time in this series on this watch mystery, and have it be like this coy little look at the end feels like
I agree
strange.
With you, but it could also be, hey, isn't that cool? Laura Barton was an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's probably how they met. Figure it out yourself, guys. Bye. Yeah. You know, it could be that too.
Yeah. I don't think Marvel's gotten a lot out of the formula of figure it out yourself, guys.
Draw
their
your
whole
own
thing
conclusion.
Is keep yeah. following, because we've got more crackers at the end of this little trail.
Possibly. All right, before we move on to our vision board, any other moments from the episode that you guys wanted to call out? Anything else that jumped out to you in particular?
Did we talk enough about how funny the bros were? I mean,
they're pretty funny.
Okay.
I feel like for the amount of them, they got taken down a little easily. And I kept
there
worried.
There were a lot of them.
There were a ton of them. And I kept getting worried that while they were hanging out on that ice longer, one of them was going to wake up and do something.
Yeah. You were worried they were going to become the big bad? Mm-hmm. Well, shouts to the trick arrows we got to see in that melee battle. Yeah. The frozen arrow, the rocket up into air arrow, yeah. and then the Pym arrow on the shrink setting, and then the owl picking up those dudes.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Very fun.
I wanted one little more, like, bro in a high-pitched voice, you know what I mean?
As bro!
Like, no, bro.
Help! No,
I'm
bro.
I'm an owl pellet now. We got to talk about the LARPers and the big up they got in this episode. Really entrusting them with taking their lives in their hands. When are we going to see the party down for LARPers that this episode surely is setting up?
That's, I like, if people still did web series, that 100% would be a web
100%.
Series.
I loved how it was like, nobody's listening to us. We got to suit up. And then they suited up and they were kind of just doing the same thing. It was pretty funny.
I love how they had, like, very Game of Thrones-y armor. Mm-hmm. They really went all in on that.
Well, that was Kate paid for it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was fun, and I'm glad that they paid that off. That was very nice. The other thing that we should probably talk about is the mid-credits sequence that comes up after a note of Happy Holidays from Marvel Studios. We get to see the full version of Save the City from Rogers the Musical. Pete, how'd you feel about that?
I mean, I felt the same way the first time I saw it.
Loved it to bits.
No.
To bits.
Pete didn't love it. I sort of agree. This is diminishing returns for me. I would have much preferred some answers to our outstanding questions.
I liked it. I thought it was fun because it's a cheesy, very silly Broadway number. And I liked it divorced of any emotional intent for the first episode, which, if you recall, I hated. Yes. So just getting to see it as a visual, I thought was fun and enjoyable, and all the performers belted their hearts out. So that's wonderful. But I do think, to the point that you're making, I enjoyed it partially because I was expecting another more serious scene at the end there. So for that to be the only thing was a little disappointing.
Now, Justin, you're a line producer. Was that one guy who was on the edge of his seat, was he directing it? Was he like a... Somebody Jeez. Reads lines in case people forget. Like, what was that person?
That's not what a line producer is, someone who reads lines.
Oh, sorry. Since it was a musical, there was a point when they were all in front of the stage standing evenly with each other in a line. Does the line producer do that?
Yeah.
Yep. Make sure, hey, one step back.
That was
lady.
The conductor, Pete. I can dig that.
It's the conductor.
Oh, yeah. It's the conductor. Okay. Yes. And he's in charge of vocal conducting.
He was
bring it up a little bit over here, Hawkeye, or what was
I assume that was Mark Shaiman who wrote the music. I'm not 100% sure because I don't know what he looks like and he wasn't credited. But
he definitely looked like a non-actor. He looked like someone who was just involved. No one watching that would have been like, we got to get a shot of the conductor in here. Like, that was definitely some sort of special thing that they were doing.
Now, I have another question about that one. Do you think because people responded so well in the advertising, they added that as the post credits later because they had already shot all the footage? Or do you think that was always the plan to have that as the post credits?
I think it was the former. I think they added that because it was cool. And I think they didn't realize they were going to use so little maybe when they first shot it in the actual episode, in the first episode. So they were like, let's just include the whole thing. And I get it. I think it was cool. I was only disappointed when I didn't get the additional scene that showed us something and brought us some real punctuation on that.
I really expected we were going to get, and this is, mind you, spoilers for Spider-Man No Way Home. So if you don't want to know, turn away. But I really thought we were going to get a Daredevil something at the end there.
I was hoping maybe like Captain America at the end gets up, old man Captain America walks out like shaking his head like this is ridiculous, you know.
I mean, just very loudly says, no, I don't think I will.
But that song is definitely one of those like ear hole songs where it's gonna be stuck in my head all day.
Ear hole?
You know, one of those like worm songs that just kind of sticks in your head and won't ever get out. Yeah. I don't know what the thing is, but you know what I'm
earworm.
Talking about.
Yeah, you said most of the word twice, but not the whole word once.
It's fucking stuck in my head and it's driving me nuts.
Yeah. All right.
I thought we were going to get more of a gesture. Just two things. I thought we were going to get more of a gesture to the Echo series here because.
More of a gesture?
More of a like hey, if you in like a post credits scene. Or just like, check this like out. We were going to see that Wilson Fisk lived and had some sort of nod to that, like coming soon, basically. Because I didn't think we were going to get a Daredevil moment here. But the other thing I wanted to say, one of my favorite lines from the whole show, maybe I've heard in a long time in any Marvel project, when in the middle of the battle, Hawkeye shoots the arrow and splits it. And Kazi goes, nice shot. And he goes, yeah no shit. I thought that was so funny. He's Hawkeye. No shit.
That was great. All right. Why don't we move to our vision board where we talk about stuff coming in the future. We've certainly touched on a lot of this so far. But Pete, why don't you go first? What do you want to see coming off of this Hawkeye series? What's the thing you want to see most coming next?
I would love to see Yelena and the new Hawkeye because those two are just magic. Or if we're just going to get an Echo series, awesome. Maybe not the first episode, so Justin owes us both $1,000, but maybe like the second episode.
Hard $1,000.
Justin?
My big outstanding things coming out of this are who is Kate's dad? Feels like that is something that we saw him at the beginning. He worked for the Kingpin, lost a lot of money. He feels like he's potential villain fodder here. Played by an actor that Brian D'Arcy James, right, played him? Mm-hmm. Like a sort of a medium deal actor anyway. Like I thought for sure we were going to get something on who her dad was and could see that being a thing. And then what's the deal with Jack? Like, I think we can see some swordsmen here. What's the next move for swordsmen? Jack Dalton, another great actor playing a cool role. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, my big thing, other than what you guys said, is I just want to see Kingpin come back. Like we've talked about, there's a lot of options there for ways of bringing him back, ways of him not being dead because bodies or it didn't happen. And Vincent D'Onofrio is so good as he doubled down on in this episode. It would be a shame not to bring him back for future projects in some form. And folks, that is it for the Hawkeye portion of our podcast. We'll definitely be back with whatever Marvel series is next. We actually don't know on the schedule at this point. Maybe we'll throw a couple of bonus episodes in there, checking back with the previous movies that we've missed or haven't recapped so far in the meantime. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast and YouTube coming out. We would love to chat with you about Hawkeye or other Marvel stuff. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Marvel Vision Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
Yeah, no shit.